Trib Live Radio presents the Penguins Roundtable Show, featuring Trib hockey writers Jason Mackey and Jonathan Bombouli.
Wake up, superstar!
Hosted by Ken Laird.
Want to go, pretty boy?
Come on.
The best hockey talk in Pittsburgh, right now on Trib Live Radio.
We're going to play some friggin' old-time hockey!
An hour of top-notch Penguins talk every Friday, 1 to 2 p.m. It's Pens Roundtable Show here on Trib Live Radio. You know Jason Mackey, back after a one-week hiatus. Hello, Jay.
Hello. I'm happy to not be sitting on the runway. I would have loved to see how you guys explained that one. It was tough explaining it to you in text message, Ken.
It's fine. We knew you were under some adverse circumstances. Jonathan Bombouli and I pressed on, and I think we did well, JB, although, you know, a week later here, I think I was projecting the coach may have been fired by the next time we spoke, and they've just now won 6 out of 7.
Yeah, hey, I wasn't pumping the brakes on that either, so I won't let you twist in the wind on that one. I think we were all feeling that way a week ago.
Well, should the Pens fans be calm and cool and anti-Rossi here this morning, this afternoon, I should say?
It's always good to be the anti-Rossi, but well, I mean, it's a stretch where they've won 6 of 7. I'd say it's a soft 6 of 7, if there is such a thing. I mean, they haven't put together a full 60-minute game at any point, so. You know, look, a win's a win, and I don't think anybody should be firing coaches or jumping off of bridges, but yeah, it's a soft 6 of 7. There's still a lot of holes in the game.
We'll play Rossi's rant from Wednesday a little bit later in the program, because that always gets Mackey going. We'll always love to pit those two against one another.
It's always tough to argue with things that are illogical.
You can't fight crazy. Well, you know, I think he makes some valid points. I don't want to speak for every Penguins fan, but they have not won pretty or comfortably on a number of occasions during this 6 of 7. What of all the wins they've had here, Jay, which one was the most impressive to you? Would it have been the Nashville win or the Capitals win on Wednesday?
I actually think the past two have been the most impressive, and for different reasons. As Jonathan wrote about in his game story coming off the Capitals win, the resolve they showed bouncing back from that goal. This was a team that I think, I don't want to say they questioned whether they could do that, but it certainly didn't hurt to see it in action. So that meant a lot to me. And you go into Washington the way they've been playing, you stop their power play, you beat Braden Holtby a couple times. Yeah, it could have been better. Absolutely. And the fact that they hung four on somebody, anybody, the Little Sisters of the Poor, I don't care. I think that did something for their confidence as well. And I know it was Buffalo. I know Buffalo, you know, may challenge for a playoff spot, likely not. I think the fact that they could hang four meant a lot.
Yeah, I'm with you, Jay. I think they've turned a corner a little bit. I don't want to be, like, overreact too much. They did play a Sabres team that was depleted last night, right? I mean, they were missing Kane and Bogosian and Tyler Ennis, and they're not very good to begin with, or they're young anyway.
And their number one goalie, too, Robin Lehner.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, goaltending looks bad for them, and he had trouble controlling rebounds last night, but that's got to give you confidence. And we have seen some line chemistry, right, JB? I mean, these tweaks have done some good.
Definitely. I mean, you look at, like, the winning goal in Washington, the game-winning goal with Kessel and Malkin with, like, a little give-and-go play in the offensive zone. I mean, that was, like, to me, that was just a perfect picture, perfect example of why you put those two guys together and why you get Kessel in the first place. I mean, it was just a matter of, you know, Kessel left a puck for Malkin at, like, the top of the left circle. Malkin goes, you know, does his thing, stick handling through the zone, getting toward the net. Meanwhile, Kessel just finds a hole and goes to the far post. Like, they were thinking together. They both knew what each other was doing. It was absolutely perfect. Then you saw Crosby and Hornquist hook up early in the Buffalo game. So, I mean, and I know Jason wrote about this. I think it's going to be in tomorrow's paper. Is that right, Jason? About the
tipping me? You're throwing it out of the bag. I'm kidding.
Well, no, I'm trying to promote your fine work so that people will make sure they look out for it. But yeah, I mean, the chemistry between those two lines is definitely there.
Now, you know, that goal in particular, Jason. Like, I loved Kessel finding the hole. I think Jonathan's right. But also, if you rewind the tape on that one, they got a quick shift from the fourth line in. And they got him off the ice in like 15 seconds, and they caught the Capitals' fourth liners out there. And I just want to praise Johnston a little bit, because I've been hard on him, and you know, I think a lot of people have. But that's good coaching, right? I mean, that's the kind of stuff that you're getting on a road in a road situation, your best line out against an inferior matchup. And I thought it won a game for him in that period.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't disagree with it, but more than who they're playing against, I think with that line and with the Dupuis, Crosby, Hornquist line last night, it's how they're playing. I don't care if they're playing against the first line, fourth line. Those guys have figured something out. And I'm not diminishing what you're talking about, Kenny. I think Mike Johnston has got a bad rap, and Penguins fans are kind of under this impression that his seat is really hot. It is not. They would like to score more on the power play. They would like to score more goals, but they're not looking at other options at this point. So, yeah, it was a good move by Johnston to do that. I like the way these things are sort of falling together right now.
Now, the criticisms, I think a lot of people, including TSN, had a big headline after the win even, what's wrong with Sidney Crosby? He had been scoreless in 8 of 9 games going into last night, which he took care of quickly last night, but the point was still there that I think the word that the writer used, Frank Saravalli, who's a former Flyers writer, by the way, that the system Johnston's been using is like militaristic almost and stifling to their star players. Is there truth in that? Is that why we're seeing such low-scoring hockey?
Yeah, Frank's not wrong. I read the same piece that you're talking about, Kenny, and it actually led me to go back to a story I did last year on Sidney and him putting up Selke-level numbers, and I went back through all the quotes that I had from that story, and I want to read you a quote from Johnston at that time. Though keep in mind this was late last year, but I really wanted our centers to come low defensively, stay in the zone longer, come out together with the forwards, even underneath the forwards a lot of times. It's both our defensive position and our breakout position. It was selling all of our centers on how we want to play in our own zone. And I'll go on and put a few more of these up on the blog. I'm not going to write it for print because it's just that the quotes are too old. But the fact that this system is a little bit different for these centers, yeah, it's true. And you need a center to be a good two-way player. Let's not mistake this. It's not like, oh, the centers are coming back in the zone. This is so rare. That's not rare. But what Frank wrote and what is true is that Mike is requiring Sidney to focus a little bit more on defense.
But is there anything wrong with that? Like, in a way, like that's what Zetterberg used to do so well when Babcock was coaching him in Detroit. He was a 200-foot player. That gets praised in the game, right? Like, Marian Hossa is a great full-length hockey player. So that shouldn't be a bad thing just on its general principle. But it does feel like with this team it's not the right fit. Then again, they're winning games. Well, so it's hard to bitch about it.
Here's the thing. The fact that, look, there's no doubt that Johnston wants his centermen to come back deep into the offensive zone, or into the defensive zone, both to help out defensively and to start the breakout. But here's the thing. It's not designed, it's designed to also be the beginning of a dynamic breakout. Like, the center comes low, the puck side winger stays low. You got four guys who are supposed to act as a unit, as a pack, so that the puck carrier has three options, and they're supposed to swiftly move through the neutral zone. But the fact that it starts deep, with your center playing in a defensive area of the ice, that's just supposed to be the sort of the launching point for a dynamic breakout. So It's on paper, it's not really as defensive as it sounds or as it has looked so far. It's supposed to be that sort of, it became popular with the Finns. They did in an international competition, that four-man pack through the neutral zone. It's supposed to be an offensive way to play. It's just that sort of the unintended consequence of it has been that it's turned into a defensive way to play, and Crosby and Malkin get sort of caught up in that because they've always really wanted to be good two-way players. I mean, that is their inclination, So it's not, like, on paper, it's not drawn up to be a boring defensive system, but it has turned out to be that through the first 10 games of the year.
It's also an easy label to apply when he's not scoring. What's different? Sure. Oh, he's playing too much defense. He's in his own zone. And, again, it's just like saying he's forcing the puck to Phil Kessel. It's not wrong, but it's not all of the story.
Like you even wrote about Sid's shot totals recently, Jason, right? And that night he went out and got 9 shots, and lo and behold, it was the game he had 3 points. So you weren't wrong, and right? I mean, people pointed it out. If he's going to put points up, he's got to be in the offensive zone and put it on net.
No, and to me, if somebody asks what's wrong with Sidney Crosby, that would be the first thing I point to, honestly, is shooting the puck, attempting shots, being aggressive.
Which Rick Tocchet said in that same article, didn't he?
Yeah. That carries more weight to me than the two-way center stuff. Let's not forget, Sidney Crosby was months away from winning the scoring title last year, or if he does something in Buffalo.
And he's still led in points per game.
Right. So the scoring's not that big a thing. It's just he hasn't really found any continuity with his line mates. I think part of that is he's not been aggressive enough. I wrote about that. He needs to shoot the puck more. He did that last night. I like that. If you watched his first couple possessions, very much looking to shoot right away. I think it's a little bit of a comfort thing having Dupuy there and healthy. He and Hornquist really play well together.
I think there's some nights where the inclination is, okay, Crosby doesn't have any points, and a lot of times people will say, you know, immediately jump to his defense because, you know, he's Sidney Crosby, and they say, well, he did a lot of other things, you know, that didn't show up on the score sheet necessarily. Some nights that's true, and some nights that's not true. I mean, you have to take it on a case-by-case basis. The game in Washington, he didn't have any points. He went 18-8 on faceoffs. He was killing penalties. He was, you know, playing well in the defensive zone. That game, it's absolutely true. He had an outstanding game without having any points at all. So he, you know, there's some of those are thrown in there. To me, that's probably, you know, you'd really want to look at that more than, you know, does he have a point tonight? Because there are nights where he can really drive the bus without it putting up points.
Yeah, and it's funny because, like, if they've become a defensive team, they've not done a very good job of living up to that the last two games, right? I mean, Fleury was the clear number one star in Washington, and last night they gave up, you know, what, 53 shots. So unless they've all of a sudden changed their identity, they're now back to allowing pretty good scoring chances, and their goaltending is what's saving them the last two games.
I think the reality of this team right now is they're not as good defensively as they're letting on, and they're not as bad offensively as they're letting on. And I think you're starting to see those two things kind of even out. Here's a stat for you, Kenny and Jonathan. Over the past five games, the Penguins have allowed 36.4 shots on goal. That is terrible. That is absolutely terrible. Not even
unless
close
they're perimeter
to what they
shots
do.
That, you know, are like not, you know, if they're all from the blue line, fine.
It still shouldn't have it. It's a matter of possession. The Buffalo Sabres generated 83 shot attempts last night. So,
Again,
perimeter, I get it. I'm not saying that, you know, I'm not taking that as gospel, but I'm just saying that defensively, they're not a keep the other team to one goal every night kind of team.
No, they're not constructed that way. But the one caveat I would have with the shot numbers that they're giving up is that you said that was the last five games, those numbers?
Yeah.
They've won four of them.
Yeah, oh yeah.
So, and when you, but my point is that when you're leading in the third period, you know, the score effect, it dictates that you're not going to take as many shots as your opponent. That Buffalo game, for instance, is, I mean, you know, obviously the Penguins sat back and Buffalo took it to them in the third period, but the shot totals early, it wasn't a 24-4 period. I mean, that's just a matter of the score effect. Buffalo's down two goals. They're just going to fling everything they can at the net. So, you know, yeah, it's a thing, but so much of it is dependent on situational, you know, factors, the score and the time of the game.
And last night's the back end of a tough, you know, back-to-back trip. I mean, Johnston said that it's an excuse, but it kind of is a good one.
I think they ran
out of gas.
Yeah, in the third period. You know,
exactly.
I mean, you don't want to say that all night, but once you get down to those last couple of minutes and Buffalo's fresh and you're not, I think you see some, just a little extra jump from the Sabres that you didn't see from the Penguins.
Okay, so let me get to this, and I want the emailers to weigh in as well. sportstalk@tribweb.com. Does this team still have fundamental flaws after winning 6 out of 7? Are you convinced they fixed it, they're trending in the right way, this team's going to be a postseason team as we sit here today? sportstalk@tribweb.com. And we'll play Rossi's thing coming up here in a minute, but, like, Fleury has been so encouraging, right? If you're talking the big four stars and how they've looked so far, Malkin and Fleury have looked awesome. Yes?
Okay. Yes.
In both cases? That's pretty good news.
Sure.
I'll take this one first.
Yeah.
I thought they were a playoff team before all of this happened. I still think they're a playoff team, and I think they're a flawed team right now. And not flawed in the sense that, you know, there are no fixes. It's just, to me, this is a team that's still kind of trying to figure out what it is. And that word identity gets thrown around and whatever. But I think the water is trying to, you know, is kind of finding its level right now, might be the best way I can put it. And right now, you know, outside of the past two games, I would argue that they haven't had a top two lines really play together all that well. Their defense is sorting itself out. I think at the end of the season, Derek Pouliot's going to be back. I think actually before long, Derek Pouliot's going to be back. But you're going to add Eric Fair into the mix this week. There's a lot of moving parts here, and I think this team is still figuring out what it is. I think it's a good team, but I think it is just taking a little bit, maybe a little bit longer than they would have thought.
Which I proposed this to Rossi, Jonathan. Like, they do have six or seven new faces in the forward camp. Isn't there something to that, that it's going to take them a little while to gel and flush this all out?
Sure, and tomorrow night's game is going to be the first time they actually have everybody together with Fair coming back, and that's not something to be taken lightly. Fair is a big time player. So yeah, I think there absolutely is something to that in terms of needing a little bit of time to come together.
All right, now here's some of Rob, because I know this gets Mackey going, and I'm sure we'll spark some emails. This is from Wednesday, if you missed it, before the last two wins, but Rob was with us today, and his general thesis remains the same. Here's our Trib columnist talking about why he's not of a belief that anything's fixed. Are we holding them to too high of a standard to be excellent out of the gate when they're very new?
No, I did not set the standard. They did. They set the standard. They fired guys that had won and said they weren't good enough. We're going to go out and do better. Okay? This isn't about who they fired. They set that standard. They came right out and said it wasn't good enough to get to the playoffs every year, to win divisions, to be a top seed, to have great regular seasons. We have to do that and win the Stanley Cup.
Okay, well, we're only 10 games in, eight games in. I mean,
Ken, they are a lost franchise. No.
They just beat Nashville on Saturday. No, it's a good team.
No, they did not beat
They're
Nashville.
They're surviving.
They did not beat
lost.
Nashville on Friday. Marc-Andre Fleury bailed a woeful offensive hockey team out, and Evgeny Malkin was not called for a penalty. Okay, two of their wins had come in a format that won't exist in the postseason if they're fortunate enough to make it. Their captain has gone 37 of the last 85 games without a point. Okay, they are a bottom 20 team in power play and offense over their last 60 games played under this coaching staff with this management. Nobody knows who's calling the shots. Nobody's accountable to anything. They are a meandering, wandering joke of a hockey franchise compared to what they were, which was a standard-setting contender, okay? If anybody thinks this is just a bad eight games, they have not been looking at the past 2 years, the last of the Shiro Bylsma era and this past one, okay? This has been an erosion, a regression to a team that is closer, as I've stated repeatedly, to missing the playoffs and being a lottery team than they are winning a Stanley Cup. I will say this now. You can play this, Josh, whenever you want. They will not win another Stanley Cup with Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin. One of those guys has to go. This is broken. The only way to fix it is to execute the whole thing and start anew.
And they're going to have to sell the team before that happens.
Because and who's going to want to buy
you
this?
You can get the gist of this is what keeps going on
who's
for
going
a,
to want
a little
to
bit
buy
further. there's part of your Rob Rossi rant from Wednesday.
It's a couple All of right. minutes I'll never get back.
Jason, your thoughts?
I hope he was safe getting down off of his soapbox. I don't think it's as bad as Rob is pointing out. I just don't. I don't know whether that's our differing personalities or what, but to me, they went into Nashville and they struggled to score and they did a lot of things wrong, but the world didn't end. The sun came up on Sunday. I saw it. They need to fix the power play. They've got a really good goaltender right now. They have guys with proven track records of scoring, and they need to figure that out. I think they have at least a top eight talent level in the Eastern Conference, maybe more. If you think Mike Johnston is the problem, that's fine. I would argue that they have enough talent on the roster to win despite Mike Johnston, and I don't even think that's the scenario that they're encountering. I think that Mike Johnston is a good hockey coach for this team. I don't think they're playing the style that is best suited to them, but I don't think it's that far off. So I don't know. I know that's a bunch of things in a bunch of different directions, Kenny, but you just played me a long and sort of mind-blowing clip there.
Well, I think it was. I mean, it's talking about trading one of the big two, Jonathan, and, you know, it's a lost franchise, and they have no answers. So
I think he said to execute somebody, did he not?
I don't know.
I'm not kidding. I think I heard execute.
Well, the power play was a mess. They did score a big power play goal last night. I mean, would that have been enough? Like, if they had scored five more power play goals, maybe we're not focused on the 1.6 goals per game or whatever it was that they were at, right, coming into this week.
That would have made a huge difference. Let me get a crack at Rossi here first, though, if you don't mind.
By all means.
Here, I don't necessarily disagree with him that much. Like, there's going to reach a point where, look, As Crosby and Malkin get in, and other key players get into their late 20s and they get into their 30s, they're not going to be getting better. I mean, that's just, you know, the passage of time. Father Time is undefeated. So at some point, the window does close. And you have to be, your management has to be proactive as far as that goes. And they have to go ahead and say, the window's closed, we're going to rebuild. That's going to happen at some point. It's inevitable, and there's no question. I think Rossi thinks that that point has already been reached. That is obviously a matter for debate. I think it probably hasn't been reached quite yet, and I think it's probably still a couple of years away. So what I just tried to do was take some of the out of what Rossi said.
Hyperbole?
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I don't mean Rossi to English. You know, translation.
Translating Rossian. Yeah, that is on Google Translate. There's a Rossi app. Yes.
He thinks that, you know, now's the time to blow it up. I think most people probably think you're going to have to blow it up a little bit later down the road.
But there, I mean, he is correct in the expectation part of it. I'll give him this: that if they get to the postseason, they have fooled themselves into thinking things are fixed and they can win in the playoffs, and they don't. They're going to come under the same fire as always. They can't score, and they've played the wrong way all year, and they wasted. They didn't play the young guys, and Sprong wasn't in soon enough, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, I mean, another part about this is that, you know, they in order to be competitive a couple of years ago, you know, you locked in some guys to some contracts. So people talk about playing the young kids, but, I mean, you got guys, your Kunitz, Scuderi, Dupuy, guys like that, Perron, they picked up guys who make close to $4 million. You know, it's you lock yourself into a cap situation, and you do that because you have to. And when you have Chris Kunitz scoring 30-some goals at $3-point-something million, it's the greatest thing in the world. But the downside of that is, you know, when I talk about a window, I mean, the window with some of those guys was 2 years ago. It's not now. So it's a fluid
thing. How about
the
celebration when Kunitz scored? Did Crosby rub his belly when he came over to the bench? That was incredible.
There was like a whole team kind of falling back into the bench thing. Yeah, that guy
really
hadn't scored in a while.
It was a big goal in hindsight, but yeah, I mean, to that point, they're strapped with some contracts.
Right. That's right. They're strapped with some contracts, and it's not an ideal situation. It's not kind of like a moving forward kind of roster. It's a, you know, win now kind of roster because tomorrow might not look so hot. And that's just life. That's the life cycle of a team. And that, you know, if they don't win or come pretty damn close to winning the whole thing, then yeah, you're going to say that they failed to meet expectations because, you know, the one thing I completely agree with Rossi on is they created those expectations for themselves.
And that's good. I mean, as a fan base, you want that. You want the cup or bust to be, that's pretty good expectations to have.
You don't want
maybe not realistic.
You right. You don't want the team to be like, you know, we got some old guys. We're just kind of winding down here. So don't mind us. We'll do the best we can. Some days we're going to need a nap.
Well, it makes the Sprong things fascinating to me, Jason. You broke the story earlier in the week. You talked to Rutherford, and he was going to stay beyond the 10-game tryout here. First of all, set the logistics here. They can still send him back to juniors within 40 games, right? It's just now they're going to be on the hook for his contract sooner, a year sooner?
Yeah, that's it. They burn a year of his entry-level contract by keeping him here past 9 games.
And is that a big deal or no?
I mean, it doesn't sound like it's a big deal. I do question the logic in this. And it's, you know, what I don't understand is deploying Daniel Sprong in a lessened role. And I fear that that's going to happen starting Saturday in Toronto. I don't think you're going to take Eric Fair and put him on the fourth line below Daniel Sprong. I think Sprong's going to be the one to go from that line.
Hmm.
And keeping him here for a fourth line role is something that I don't understand. I think the kid would be better suited to develop in junior, you know, score a bunch of goals and dominate. That being said, with this team, would anybody argue that they're going to be expected to stay healthy the rest of the way? I mean, you know that they're going to have issues. So you keep Sprong, I guess. And I'm trying to think for Rutherford here. And that you keep Sprong. You have a guy like Fair. Maybe he steps down, takes a fourth-line role. He's okay with it. Bonino, same deal. Colin, whatever. You call your bottom six interchangeable. You stash Sprong. And if something happens, you know, maybe you elevate him. Maybe you elevate Bo Bennett. I don't know what you do, but you have forward depth, something they haven't had in the past. So I guess that's kind of my rant on Sprong. And from talking to Jim, I mean, they're just not the least bit concerned about any sort of deadline. You know, there's the 9-game thing, and then there's the 39/40 game thing where I don't have this in front of me. I'm not completely versed on it, but I believe that is where it takes the first year of his arbitration year. Like, if you have 7 years before you're free of arbitration, that's your first, you know, that it burns that first one. Something
yeah,
like
control,
that.
Yeah.
Team control, yeah. But again, they're not concerned about it. Rutherford views him as one of their 12 best forwards, maybe one of their 9 best, and doesn't care about that stuff.
Well, that's great, except the coach is not playing him.
I know.
You know, in a role that would accentuate his development, you would think.
Yeah.
Not only the fourth line, but like if Fair comes back and they bump him over to the left wing or something.
I don't have a problem with that. I don't have a problem at all with playing him on the left wing. He's saying he's good on the left side. To me, I would give him enough rope to hang himself. And I'm sorry for the hang himself and execute things within 5 minutes, but you got to let him see if he can do it. And I don't know. Maybe a game against Tampa Bay isn't the time to do it. Maybe we pick that game against, you know, Buffalo or a weaker team or whatever. But I would like to see what he can do on the left-hand side.
I guess that would solve some problems, Jonathan, but, you know, then you're into this guy could be a total mess in the D zone playing left wing as a right shot, and if he's not already, you know.
Yeah, I'd like to see it. If this is all part of a plan, like, you know, they're breaking the kid in slowly, and then they're going to continue to increase his responsibility as the season goes on and he gets more comfortable, who wouldn't be in favor of that? I'm not 100%.
Somebody called it the Yager plan.
Yeah.
One of our emailers that they did in 90, right? Worked him up slowly in the playoffs.
Yeah.
He emerges.
And if right. And if they're doing that, then this is great. I don't know if people, you know, if this management is, if fans trust this management that they do have a plan with Sprong. And I don't know myself, but if that's what they're doing, that's great. And, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world for a guy to be getting some limited minutes at this point. And then moving up once he's needed because of injuries. Because, look, I mean, a forward's going to get injured. A winger's going to get injured. It's going to happen. Even a team that doesn't have an injury history, they're going to lose a winger at some point. And the Penguins don't have, like, a top six guy they can call up. Some teams do. Toronto does. I mean, they have, you know, Kasperi Kapanen and the Nylander kid. Detroit does, because they always do.
But you had to get that in there, didn't you?
Yeah, those are my boys. I love that system.
He had to change out of his Dylan Larkin jersey before we came in here to do the show.
Yeah, he's my favorite player. But
what a novel concept, playing on a top line with good players around him. It's fascinating to watch.
But if the Penguins get in a situation where, okay, let's say they send Sprong back to juniors and they can't, you know, you can't call a guy up from juniors. So you have to call, they get a top six winger hurt and they got to call somebody up from Wilkes-Barre. There's no options, really. There's Dominic Simone, who's having a really good start to the season. He scored goals in 3 straight. Maybe he is. You know, I'm going to see him pretty soon, and I'm going to, you know, take a look at that kid. But beyond that, you know, Connor Sheary, is that who you're going to put in there? So
what happened to Sheary? We praised them all offseason. This was the next Tyler Johnson. Come on.
Because they put him on the top six in the preseason. He looked like he was about to pee his pants. So and he'll get over that. You know, he'll get over that. He's a good kid. He works hard. He's not a head case. None of that stuff. But the nerves got to him. And the next time he'll be a little less nervous. And then the time after that he'll be a little less nervous. But anyway, I'd rather have Sprong in that spot than anybody. Any of these prospects.
I was just going to say, they all stop peeing their pants at some point, from what I understand.
Unless you're David Perron. Why is he still playing on the top six? He's actually been better these last couple of games, I got to say.
That was sneaky, mean, and funny. I like that.
Sorry
about
that.
Yeah, that's good.
Malicious. Is that Sprong's spot? If he's going to be playing, should he be on the line with Malkin? Malkin, Kessel, Sprong.
I wouldn't make the move now. I liked what I've seen out of David Perron the past 2 games. From what I understand, or you know what I've seen, David Perron gets elevated up to a top six role and doesn't necessarily do enough to stay there, and then he finds himself back down. If he can figure out how to consistently do that once he's up there, it might stick. And to me, what I saw in Washington, I think it was 4 shot attempts, 4 hits, 2 takeaways, something like that. The guy was all over the ice. He was finishing hits illegally or legally. he was making things happen. And on a line with Malkin and Kessel, he's going to have to do that. He's going to have to be that physical guy, that physical left wing. And if he's willing to do that and he can bring it every night, then I think there's a spot for him. If he drops off again, it'll be interesting to see who they put there. I think Fair could be reasoned. Bo Bennett could be reasoned. Daniel Sprong could be reasoned. There's certainly no shortage if he falters.
What do you think, JB? I mean, Perron's the last couple of games. He did, you know, he carried the puck in the zone and that game-winning goal that Kessel scored in Washington. I mean, he's been more noticeable to me the last few games.
Yeah, he has been. And, you know, there was that one shift in the Washington game especially where he just took over the game. Of course, it ended with him taking a charging penalty, but...
Yeah,
you can live with that kind of a penalty, absolutely. I absolutely share... Look, if a coaching staff is nervous about putting an 18-year-old kid in that spot, I understand that. That doesn't strike me as strange. You're going to put an 18-year-old kid who doesn't really have any idea how to play defense on a line with Malkin and Kessel. Kessel, who doesn't, you know, play a whole hell of a lot of defense himself, nor should he. You know, we talk about the centerman worrying too much about playing defense. I mean, geez, you put Malkin with those two, and he's going to have to play defense because somebody's going to have to do it. So that definitely concerns me. Fair is the guy I really want to see because... when he's been practicing, he's been, and you know, they just work him in because he was injured, and you know, he'll take us rotate in drills and stuff. He's not rotating in with Matt Cullen's line. He's been rotating in with Crosby and Malkin's lines.
Wow!
And I don't think that's a coincidence. I think this coaching staff views him as a top six guy, and how it all is going to shake out, I'm not exactly sure. But to me, I think Fair is the guy to really keep an eye on.
I looked up something this morning about Eric Fair and his past, I think it was six seasons where he's played 50% or more of his team's games. He's averaged about a 20-goal season. He's put up about 19 goals.
Which is probably more than, you know, Perron can say.
Yeah, and it's been with lesser quality line mates than Evgeny Malkin and Phil Kessel. I can say that for sure.
Brooks-like and Joel Ward for a lot of it.
And that's not bad.
No, that's a good third line. But yeah.
You put him on a line with Malkin and Kessel. Man, I could see why that's intriguing. And if you want a guy who's good defensively, big body, can bang in the corners, it's Eric Fair.
Yeah, I'm very, very curious to see how he fits in. He could be in. He could fit in perfectly. This might be a difference maker.
He's also a right shot, but I guess he's played left wing plenty, right? He's played everywhere.
I have a thing in our notebook tomorrow. I was talking to Eric Fair the other day. Who he said he couldn't remember whether it was last year or 2 years ago, but he literally played all 12 forward spots on the Capitals.
The Boudreauian system, or was that actually after Boudreau left?
That would be, I can't remember that. I think that's Trotz's first year.
I don't know.
That would have been last year, yeah.
Yeah. It was either Trotz's first year or Oates's last. I can't remember. Well, he didn't remember either. But, I mean, the 1 through 12. You know, both wings, center, all the way up and down the lineup. I think that's interesting. So, yeah, I mean, left wing's no thing.
They ought to do that in a game sometime, one game. You know how they'll take like a
utility. It's like a volleyball team.
It's like the Don Kelly position.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like, I remember Jose Oquendo did that when I was a kid one time. He played all nine positions. They let him catch and pitch one inning, too. Maybe Fair could get a couple shifts in goal, and they could really get some publicity. Some publicity. That's what this franchise needs.
We get the mail pouring in at sportstalk@tribweb.com here on the Pens Roundtable Show. We'll get to some of that coming up here on the program. The anti and supporters, Rossi supporters are out. Are they fundamentally flawed despite the 6 out of 7 in the win column? I want to talk to you guys also about Pouliot, more on him, where he'll play if he does get called up. The tragic, tragic loss of beautiful Bobby Farnham this week. And the puck-stealing jag-off behind Dan Bylsma last night at Consol Energy Center. Those and a couple other probably bigger issues. It's all on the Pens Roundtable every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m. Ken Laird along with Penguins writers Jason Mackey and Jonathan Bomboli here on Trib Live Radio.
Do you love your job so much that every Monday you say TGIM? If not, it's time to find better with Trib Live Jobs and Monster. Millions of jobs, millions of reasons to love Monday again. Looking for jobs in the greater Pittsburgh area? Visit jobs.triblive.com today.
Pittsburgh's college hockey team, the Robert Morris Colonials, take to the 84 Lumber Arena ice at the RMU Island Sports Center on Neville Island this season as defending Atlantic Hockey Conference champions. Season, group, and individual game tickets are on sale now. New ticket prices for the 2015-16 season are in effect and offer many great opportunities for Colonial fans to come out and support their favorite team. Season tickets start at just $120 for 15 games. Individual tickets start at just $10 if you buy in advance and $12 day of game. There are also special discounts for kids, seniors, and military, plus lots of promotional giveaways. For more information or to buy, visit rmutickets.com or call the RMU Ticket Office at 412-397-4949.
You don't need to face criminal charges alone. Call me, Frank Walker, 412-532-6805.
Trib Live Radio presents the Penguins Roundtable Show, featuring Trib hockey writers Jason Mackey and Jonathan Bombouli.
Wake up, superstar!
Hosted by Ken Laird.
Want to go, pretty boy? Come on.
The best hockey talk in Pittsburgh, right now on Trib Live Radio.
We're going to play some friggin' all-time hockey!
Mackey and Bombouli ready to depart on the Western trip after a trip to Toronto. Who's got the short straw, guys? Who's going to Calgary, Edmonton, and all parts Northwest Territories?
I got that one. Nice. And I don't think it's a short straw. It's a good trip. I wish we had more time in Calgary, though.
Well, Calgary's the A-lister of that trio?
I would put it second. I mean, you'll never beat Vancouver. That's a top five road city for me. And you get an off day or a practice day there. And then, I guess, an off day. They're supposed to practice the Thursday. It's the... You know, it's the one day between three and four nights, so it might get bagged. But, yeah, a couple days in Vancouver, never complain about that. But Calgary's the last leg of it. So, you know, you take my flight's at like 6:20 a.m. on Saturday morning. And so you're going off not much sleep, and then you don't have much to do. You just want to go to your hotel and sleep.
You go, I get a ride up to Calgary, and you'll be done for the trip.
That's it.
Penguins not back home until November 11th against the Canadiens.
Yep.
What's reasonable to expect on this trip, guy? I mean, how important is it, this little four-game jaunt?
I think you need three wins. These are teams that they should beat. They're not very good teams. I understand, you know, sweeping Western Canada will be a difficult one. But going up to Toronto, that's not a good hockey team. You should win that one. And you go into Vancouver, theoretically, you'd like to win that one. And then, you know, if you split a back-to-back on the road, you're happy with it, in my opinion.
Calgary has definitely been disappointing. Toronto is, you know, rebuilding. And then Edmonton is Edmonton. Edmonton's going to get good at some point.
They came back and beat Montreal last night. Did you see that?
Yeah, so, I mean, maybe they're starting to get good now. I'm not sure. I mean, it's like a severe thunderstorm warning. You know it's coming.
Will they allow Perron back in the building, or has he been banned from the premises?
I think he was thought of pretty well in Edmonton, wasn't he?
He was.
Yeah.
Especially when he brought a first-round pick back there, celebrating in the streets.
Yeah. But no, I mean, I think, like, he, I don't think he's thought of poorly in Edmonton at all. And he wasn't here until, you know, the second half of last season.
Let's talk about a couple of the potential changes beyond Eric Fair, guys. Pouliot was a name you threw out and wrote about earlier in the week, Jason. When are we realistically thinking Derek Pouliot, who played in the western parts of the continent with Mike Johnson for a while, for a long while, right?
Yeah.
With the Portland Winterhawks.
He's from out that way, too. I believe he's from Saskatchewan. Could be wrong on that, but he's from out that way. The only thing I can tell you is sooner than later. That's a direct quote from Jim Rutherford. They're very happy with his development. It's a matter of getting confidence on a consistent basis, is another quote from Jim, but translated to mean, I'm not sure. I mean, he's not going to be going on the Western Canada trip, obviously. Maybe when they come back, I guess, is reasonable to expect that sometime between there and the Western U.S. Western U.S. is the beginning of December, and I think this is still something where they want to see a couple games in a row, a couple more games, see him produce, see him doing what they're wanting him to do. Smarter in his own zone, more confidence, less turnovers, all that junk, before they end up pulling the trigger.
And he would replace whom? Would it be a rotational thing, or like?
It's a good question.
Anybody they're unhappy with? Dumoulin, Lovejoy?
No, quite the opposite for those two. Honestly, Mike Johnson had some glowing things to say about those guys before the game last night. They wanted to get Clendenning in a game. I was actually surprised that Scuderi didn't come out last night in just a rest situation.
Yeah, back to backs. Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, Modelletang, Cole, those guys aren't coming out, so I'm not sure what they do.
Farnham is gone. And there was, oh boy, it's a tough week, JB. I know for you especially. God, your personal connection. He's now a New Jersey Devil. What happened?
Well, it's a sad day. actually, it's not a sad day for Bobby Farnham. You know, it's just a sad day for us who don't get to be entertained by him as much anymore. No, I talked to him after that. And, I mean, once everybody got healthy, it was pretty clear that Farnham and Porter were going to go on. Well, P- Porter didn't have to go on waivers because he already cleared less than 10 games ago. But Farnham was going to go on waivers, and it was, I knew in June that there was a really good chance that, or July, that Jersey was going to claim Farnham because John Hines loves Bobby Farnham, and Ray Shearer likes him too. So, you know, he hasn't played yet, so, you know, I'm not sure that he, there's always the situation where, you know, a guy gets claimed on waivers and then he doesn't necessarily pan out, and then so they put him back on waivers and then his original team can claim him and send him to the minors. So that could happen at some point. But, you know, look, this team's going towards skill. They're going away from grit, and they just, Bobby, unfortunately, was the odd man out.
Yeah, and I can't really knock them for that because, I mean, I think that is your hunch with the Penguins, right? That's their identity. It's skill. So that seems right, but that Washington game in particular, guys, like, they were getting pushed around. Mm-hmm. On one hand, that could be bad. Tom Wilson was taking a run at everybody he could possibly find in his vicinity.
Well, in fairness, David Perron sort of started that.
Okay.
He took that run on Wilson first, and that sort of woke Wilson up. But you're right.
And Bobby Farnham's not exactly the guy that you let out of his cage to go clean up a mess.
No, you want him to make a mess.
Yeah.
He could make a mess with a star player, right, which is a deterrent or a possible deterrent.
Well, until Tom Wilson goes out and tries to take Sidney Crosby's head off. Like,
well, he did that anyway.
You're making a fine point, Kenny, but I think the ideal world, and this isn't really ideal, I mean, I would rather have skill than this scenario, but if Bobby Farnham's on your team, you want somebody like Tom Sestito or even like a Jordan Tutu, which he'll have in Jersey. Somebody capable of cleaning up that mess, of putting an end to it. Bobby Farnham's going to agitate. He's going to draw penalties and all that junk. But he's not going to stand up and fight. When he steps over the board, I mean, nobody's like intimidated and runs back to the bench because they don't want to fight this guy. I mean, he's not even that good of a fighter. He's not that big. To me, it was more of a problem for the Penguins in what he could stir up and what other teams might become agitated by than what they were sort of intimidated by with him.
Yeah, you almost want to let opponents just sleep. Don't wake them up. Because,
yeah, we're not going to play that game.
Yeah.
And fighting has been down in the league, so, I mean, maybe this is a trend that they're, you know, on the cutting edge of to do away with it. And actually, I was stunned that Milbury and Keith Jones both praised them after the Washington game on the national game for, you know, hanging tough. It was a gutsy win. They found a way, and they sort of turned the other cheek, which I guess is accurate, right? They got through that game, and
yeah,
no worse the wear against the more physical, bigger team.
They have to, though. They have to turn the other cheek, because if they start to play that game, they're not going to be any good at it. So they absolutely have to be total pacifists. I was looking up some numbers. Like, of the guys on the current roster, Chris Kunitz has the most career fighting majors with 8.
Wow.
Then you've got Crosby is next. Crosby and Lovejoy are next with 6.
Jeez.
And then Letang and Ian Cole have 5.
Yeah, I can't imagine any of these guys fighting.
Nobody else has more than 2.
Could you imagine, like, Lovejoy or Mata dropping the gloves? I mean,
Lovejoy's done it 6 times.
So, he has?
Yeah, 6 of them.
Wow.
Mata's never. You know, Scuderi had that one last year against Jake Voracek, which may have been described as a tickle fight. I'm not exactly sure. That's not fair. I don't want to pick on the guy. I mean, he stood up for his teammates, so good for him. But I was
Benigno,
thinking,
Cullen, will those guys fight? No?
Let me tell you about Cullen. Cullen has 2 career fighting majors. They were both in the 90s. That was a long time ago. He hasn't fought recently. So Benigno, I don't believe, has ever fought. I was thinking that'll make a good contest. Maybe I'll get that up on the blog someday this week while you're in Western Canada there. Predict the next fighting major that the Penguins
get.
Yeah.
It's like Ken's predictor. But
yeah, yeah. Who would get it?
Sestito might win just based on...
He's hurt and in the minors, and he might get it anyway. Yes,
I know.
You're absolutely right.
Put the GM off. Maybe the GM should be in that category. Like, you should take off-ice personnel and see if they'll fight before the on-ice.
I'd take Rutherford
possible.
For sure.
He's
feistier,
yeah. But I don't mean that in any sort of, you know... I don't mean that to say that these guys aren't tough or anything like that. I mean, it's not meant to be a shot. It's just sort of it's amazing to me the way the game has changed and the way the roster has been constructed. And they don't fight, and you know what? They shouldn't fight.
They're a bunch of pacifists.
Yeah, 99% of the time they should just walk away.
They allow opponents to attack with impunity.
And
that's what somebody said to me on Twitter.
Impunity.
Impunity.
Somebody used that word on Twitter.
Pacifist and impunity.
How about that?
That's
what we're
not
doing?
Efficient.
We're
Twitter.
Raising the level of discourse around here.
Well, I mean, beyond the fighting part of it, having a tough team can be important. I mean, this is, they traded for Aginla and Brendan Morrow a few years ago to try to beef up for the playoffs, right? I mean, are they going to get pushed around when it counts without having guys that at least are tough enough to get through the grind of this season?
I mean, yeah, that could happen on against Washington. You'll see a little bit of that. Against
Rangers?
Rangers, maybe a little bit. Rangers have that, they don't have that sort of, they have the kind of, I don't want to say they have like offensive toughness, they have defensive toughness to me in the sense that like they're tough to deal with, but they don't go around starting trouble. Columbus is physical. There's some teams that are physical, but for the most part, teams don't try to push you around, so it's not really like a huge concern if once a month somebody tries to push you around and you win the game anyway. You know what I mean? I could be wrong. Maybe, you know, these things do, trends change, and maybe they will get pushed around, but I just don't see a lot of teams out there who are anxious to do a lot of pushing.
Hmm. All right, you guys want to hear from your fans?
Let's do it.
Sportstalk at tribweb.com.
Our fans?
Yes.
Just like the Penguins, and we just happen to be on the radio talking about it.
Yeah, right. That's more like it.
All right, John first in today. He says, Mike Johnston's system, guys, is a great fit for Malkin. He's more than a point-per-game player with Kessel, and he's been a monster defensively. Agree or disagree? Johnston's system, perfect fit for Geno.
I don't disagree. Again, like with Crosby, I think that Mike needs to relax a little bit. I think these guys should be given a little bit more creative latitude than they're giving right now. I think it's a good thing for the team and the team concept to have these guys doing it, and I think they're good at it. I just think there should be equal amounts of creativity.
Mike emails and says, Bombouli, have you watched the last two games? Malkin's D hasn't just been excellent. His entire offensive game has flowed from it.
Right. Isn't that what I was saying?
I thought that's what you were saying.
Yeah. Well, okay, let me answer the question. Yes, I have watched the last two games. And
but only one of them on TV, so you're not as smart.
That's true. But actually, in Washington, I watched quite a bit on TV because of the way the press room is set up, but that's neither here nor there.
Good popcorn there. Still good popcorn in D.C.?
Yeah, not bad. There's a new press room, and it was whatever. I'm not going to get into all that. But the Malkin part of it. That fits into what I was saying, is in the sense that it's supposed to be the he's supposed to come back low defensively, and then it's supposed to start that, you know, four-man breakout. Malkin's pretty good at running that because he likes to carry the puck, and when you give him three options to make a pass to, he doesn't always use them. Sometimes he keeps it himself, which is fine. But it, like on paper, yes, this is drawn up for a guy like Malkin. So the fact that he succeeded in it the last couple games shouldn't be that surprising.
Can I take an aside from that? I don't think this system's been very good for Chris Letang so far. They've almost made Dumoulin and Lovejoy better and Letang worse, if that's possible. I don't know if that's his fault or the system's fault.
That's interesting.
The system was pretty good last year when he was a Norris Trophy candidate, wasn't
it? And it should be perfect for him, but you're right. He's been kind of – he hasn't.
I don't think he's been bad. He's just not been – he's certainly not been like – P.K. Subban or Carlson, or you know what his money would suggest he should be in terms of a difference maker.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, there've been a lot of guys taking a more defensive posture than they normally might, and he's been one of them. You know, maybe that's gonna. Here's like when you talk about whether this is a team with fatal flaws and whatnot. Here's what I think. Last night against Buffalo, they showed when they scored those two goal bursts, especially the first one. Which was Crosby fueled. I thought that was like a really good offensive showing. And there was a period in the Ottawa game a couple weeks ago where they had a really strong offensive period where they just, you know, dominated and looked dangerous. When you see a couple stretches like that, right? And then you look at, like, say, the third period against Washington where they were really doing a good job of shutting down Ovechkin and playing defense after the goals had been scored early. You can see bits and pieces now after 10 games where you say to yourself, well, if you put all that together, this would be one hell of a team. Before last night and before the last two games, I don't think you saw all those pieces. And now you've seen them for a few minutes at a time or a period at a time. Look, I mean, this is the NHL. Everybody has good stretches, so I'm not saying that this is unique to the Penguins. It's not. But you've seen it recently. You think to yourself, boy, if they can put together that third period Washington defense with the first period Buffalo offense, and they're not going to win 2-1 or 4-3. They're going to win 4-1, and then you're going to really have something.
I agree with that. I think that's well said. Travis downtown emails. He says, I'm in agreement with Rossi, guys. For me, it comes down to what I don't trust. Johnston or his system. I think he's lucky in that the Pens won the last two games. I believe he would have been fired if they would have lost them. And I find myself rooting against them only for the fact that the only way I see them getting any better is firing him. And I see meandering into the playoffs with wingers like Kunitz, Bennett, and Parham that underwhelm most of the time. Something needs to change. I'm not sure what comes first, coaches, system, or players.
Well, you, in the NHL, coaches usually come first. I mean, that's just how they do things. I don't know if that would be better or worse, but if that's fair or unfair, but that's how they usually roll.
Travis, a couple things to point out. Stop using the word meandering. I'll say the same thing to Rossi. Nobody meanders. If you don't tell your wife that you meandered home, don't use it in a
lollygag.
Yeah, not lollygagging around the infield. Secondly, Mike Johnston isn't in any imminent danger of getting fired. I get that fans want to see that. I've had several conversations with several people throughout the past several days. It's not anything that is even close to being discussed. Relax. They want to score some more goals. They want to score more on the power play. Those are the focal points. Not having this guy clean out his office. Third.
In fairness, Savior, don't forget third.
Bo Bennett. He wasn't bad. That was all my point.
There were some points in the first nine games where things could have taken a left turn. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And the coach's job could have absolutely been in jeopardy. Is that fair to say?
Oh, yeah. No, I don't disagree with you.
Yeah, yeah.
But they didn't happen.
Right. It's true. They didn't.
Scott says, how are they going to get the defensemen they need, guys, at the deadline? Trade a forward or trade a pick, or what can they do?
They don't have picks.
Yeah, picks aren't a surplus. One of those forwards, Perron, Bennett?
Yeah, I mean, you got to have somebody who's going. I mean, the most logical move is to trade David Perron, but right now, you know, he's got one assist in 10 games. You need more production from that from a guy who's being given top 6 minutes. So right now, David Perron wouldn't net much, but I agree with you. That would be a logical solution, or if Bo Bennett gets going, stays healthy, and somebody might be convinced to take him.
Or you could always take somebody else's problem if they think they can do a reclamation project. That's what I was looking at. Like, Philly's trying to trade Shen. And I'm not saying that the Penguins are in on him, but that seems like the kind of move that you could probably make with a guy that, you know, you wouldn't have to give up too much because he hasn't really performed lately.
But with the Penguins being a cap team, too, we also have to think, I mean, there's got to be money going the other way. Yeah, so David Perron is money going the other way. Bo Bennett isn't necessarily that, but...
They did get a pick back for Bilesma's signing, right? And
yes.
They also got another one for Kessel trade, or what was the deal with the Kessel trade? They got one back there?
Yeah, they basically took the second rounder that went to Toronto for Winnick. They got that back.
Okay.
So, I'm not diminishing that pick, but if you're going to acquire a top four defenseman, which I think we would agree is a fairly big need on this team, you don't get that for a second round pick.
No. Especially not a young one.
A second round pick is just something to balance a deal. I mean, they need to have if David Perron has 20 goals at the deadline and you toss in a second round pick to get a top four defenseman, fine, that might get a deal done, but a second round pick for Cody Franson probably isn't happening.
That's another good reason to staple Perron to Malkin and Kessel, isn't it?
Yeah.
Pump up his trade value.
Mike emails, he says, David Perron, guys, is as bad defensively as Kessel, so you're already asking Malkin to focus a ton on D. Thing is, it's working because that's where the offense is coming from, but didn't you say that was Johnston's system anyway from the start?
That's part of
He's not wrong.
That's the plan. And yes, Perron is not exactly a Selke candidate. So maybe that sort of undermines my argument about Sprong and how that would be too much of a defensive liability because the guy they have there is an iffy defensive situation anyway. Hmm. I could be talked into Sprong in the top six very easily. And who was that tweeting that?
Mike.
Mike has pushed me in that direction.
And one more from Greg. He says, the best defense to getting pushed around is a dynamic power play. Dynamic as in scoring. That should be their focus instead of grit / fighters.
Well, they don't have one of those.
What, scores?
a dynamic power play. Oh. You're right. You're right.
Or grit / fighters.
Right. You need one or the other. Yeah, you need to punish on the power play. And the only people the Penguins punish with the power play is the paying customers who have to watch it.
I got a hat tip to Brand X or... Paper X. Didn't Molinari ask Fleury if he wanted to be on the power play after the game in D.C.? That was awesome.
Yeah, he did.
That really was good.
And I don't know. I don't want to pretend like – I mean, we wrote that story last weekend about the power play, and I've watched – in preparation for that, I watched like dozens and dozens of power play goals when the Penguins were good, other teams recently who are good. You know, I've seen some things that good teams do on the power play, but I don't know. I can't give you a good explanation for why the Penguins are as bad as they have been.
It's so funny, though. And then they do what they did last night, where it's just Kessel shot, Hornquist in front, Malkin grabs the puck in the net, boom.
Piece of cake. Like, it's the way it's drawn up, which is Kessel likes to shoot, but not one-timers. So he had a little bit of time. He took a nice shot. Goalie had a hard time with it. Hornquist is on top of the net, just banging at the puck to keep it alive. That's what they pay Hornquist to do. He's a great net front guy. Malkin finishes it because Malkin is a finisher. It was like that play was drawn up to absolute perfection, and you hadn't seen like any of that in the first 3 weeks of the season.
Well, Jason Mackey will be out in the western regions. He'll be looking for things that never happen, like this Sasquatch and power play goals to continue and all these things. So safe trip, Jay, and Toronto first up, right?
JB's got Toronto.
Yes, I've got TO, so I'll look for Sasquatch there.